Writers, KJ here. Have you heard me talk about Dabble yet? I mean, really listened? Dabble Writing Software is our new sponsor, and we love them. Serena and I can't stop playing with the outline piece of it, which is every bit as flexible as a bunch of post-it notes on your desk and a whole lot more portable. You can track everything that belongs within in a scene, how that scene fits into multiple plot lines, and where that scene belongs in the book, and you can move it with the flick of a mouse. It's honestly a little too much fun. We don't want to encourage you to procrastinate, but getting your storyline right isn't procrastination, right? It's part of the work. So try out Dabble and let us know if it helps you get your work done by downloading a free trial at dabblewriter.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag MWriting, the podcast about writing all things fiction, nonfiction, short pieces, long pieces, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting that work done. I am KJ. I am the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which is coming out, if this episode airs as planned, it is coming out but days from now, December 1st, 2020, if you're listening in real time at long last. I am also the author of the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, the former lead writer and editor of the Motherload blog at the New York Times, where I am still sometimes a contributor, and I am hard at work on revising novel number 2 and possibly drafting novel number 3, depending on what minute you ask me.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming The Addiction Inoculation, and that will be out on April 6th. And you can find my work at The Atlantic and The New York Times and Airmail and The Washington Post. And, you know, depending on when you ask me, I'm either, you know, doing PR for the new book or attempting to write the proposal for my third book.
Yay. I'm Serena Bowen. I am the author of 35-ish romance novels. And I just realized that I have a launch on the same day as KJ, I think, on December 1.
I totally knew that because I have ordered it in order to make sure that it is in my hot little hands to reduce my stress on December 1.
Well, that's amazing because I have waited to pre-order yours in all the places because I want you to have the biggest algorithm bump possible, buddy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope my pre-order didn't mess with your algorithm.
No. Yours is awesome.
Okay.
I'm a little obsessive. Just know that. Anyway, so on December 1, we will be partying.
We knew that.
I think we knew that.
I think we had that covered.
Okay. Good to know. Well, speaking of obsessions, today we're so lucky to have a guest that we're all a little bit obsessed with. And that guest is Lissa K. Adams, and she sort of burst into our bookshelves in 2019 with her amazing The Bromance Book Club, book one of a series with such a wonderful high concept that it's a romance in the purest sense of its story arc, but it also manages to turn some things about romance on their heads, and that is why we wanted to talk to Lissa K. Adams today. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be with you guys.
Yay. So we all have read probably all three of them by now.
Confession, I'm waiting to get the third one in actual paper.
Oh, right.
So I have only read the first two. So, you know, don't spoil it.
You're forgiven.
No. Spoil away.
I actually listened to your books and I am halfway through the audio for the third book. And I have to say, I always like to chime in on the narrators. I really like your narrators.
He's so great. He does such a great job. I know. They've done a great job.
And who is the narrator of book three?
Same. Andrew Iden is the same narrator.
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a book with him right now. He is the best.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. So let's see. That we have so much to talk about, but we kind of want to know the origin story of this big concept that you came up with, because When we talk with fiction writers, breakouts are always really interesting to our listenership. You know, what was the source of your breakout book, but also the big concept, the high concept, and, you know, everybody wants one, and where can you find it?
Right, exactly, right?
Can we have a link to that, please?
Right, if only there was a store or a book that would just give us all a big list.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, the way the idea came about was actually kind of twofold. And you know how, as writers, I mean, romance writers, we often laugh and say, you know, we wish that the men in our lives, whether it's our, you know, boyfriends or spouses or whatnot, that they would read romance novels too, because they model the kind of relationships that we long for, how we wish to be treated, but also because it shows the world predominantly through sort of a woman's lens, you know, because, you know, up until recently, it has predominantly been, you know, cishet women who have written romance. And so we have always, you know, that has always kind of been a running joke that, God, if only men read romance, you know. So that was always there. But then, okay, I have to be honest, like in 2016, I was really depressed, you know, after the Access Hollywood tape came out during that election. I think, like a lot of women, I just sort of fell into this like sort of state of disbelief that, you know, how is it possible we're still elevating men into positions of power who have such horrible attitudes about women, right? That all of these things that tape for me in particular was so just really set me off, because it was like this was all the stuff that we secretly feared the men that we work with were saying about us behind our backs, right?
Yes,
that you know, not even just the stuff that you know, the current president was saying, but that the other guy laughed along, right? The other guy was, Billy Bush was laughing along to this stuff. And so I think, like a lot of women, I was just sort of like, look, there has got to be a way for us to live in a world where men don't have these horrific attitudes about women, you know? And so the two ideas just sort of collided, like this idea that I needed a place to go in my own head that was, you know, full of men who got it, men who were kind, and men who had a foundation of feminism and equality. And so I sat down and just wrote this like first scene where that ended up, you know, almost word for word being in the first book and the first romance book club, of where Gavin, the main character, first meets the book club, first finds out what this thing is that he's being, you know, he thinks he's going to be, you know, commiserating with his pals over the, you know, end of his marriage. And and they throw a romance novel at him. And so that first was just kind of my entry point into this world. And I was like, I love these guys. I wish they were real. You know, I wish there was really a Malcolm out there who can, you know, pull a Bell Hooks quote out off the top of his head, and you know,
right.
You know, someone who just appreciates this genre that I love. And so that's truly where it came from, is I needed some catharsis.
Sure. And where were you in your career at that point? I mean, you have, when I look around, I see novellas by you, but not novels. Is that right?
Yeah. So I, you know, I actually have been trying, you know, learning how to write fiction for, I mean, many years. I think I joined RWA in 2003, Romance Writers of America in 2003. And, you know, to first try my hand at this, I was working as a journalist full time, but always wanted to be a fiction writer. And so finally in, you know, when I turned 40, you know, a few years ago, I was like, I'm kind of tired of waiting. And obviously there's this path to publishing that didn't exist before when I first started writing. And so I did self-publish a couple of novellas and a short novel, and was actually really happy because one of the novellas was actually was a finalist for the Rita Award, you know, that year. And which kind of helped then when I was going to get trying to find an agent and, you know, for the romance book club, I think that gave me a little bit of backing to do this on proposal. But I was going nowhere. I mean, it's a long, sort of a long saying that there are so many people in the world who are really, really good and successful at self-publishing, and I was not one of them. I sucked at it. I was really, really bad at it. I didn't have, I think, the confidence to market myself. I just was not doing well. And so I, you know, when I came up with this concept, I had a couple of author friends who were like, we really think, you know, you should try to pitch that traditionally. And so I did.
That's great. Just for our listeners who might not have devoured your series as thoroughly as we have, I just wanted to state the premise, which is that all three of her books have a book club in them. And the book club is made up of men, and the men are reading exclusively romance novels as like a way of understanding women and their relationships. And what's really brilliant about it is that it puts a lot of lines in men's mouths that women say, which, yeah. For example, in book three, my absolute favorite is at the end when the hero is rushing to meet the heroine, and I won't say why because it's a spoiler. And a secondary character says, somebody tries to slow them down and they're running the group together, and someone's like, you can't run here. And he's like, but this is the grand gesture. We always run for the grand gesture. And so what? So it's this amazing concept where you have put lines in men's mouths that wouldn't ordinarily be there. Like, right. Another line that I like from book three is, women aren't rehab centers for emotionally stunted man babies who think the key to a serious relationship is just to wait for the right woman to come along. You have to be uncomfortable and stretch yourself to be vulnerable. And that is really where the magic lies, in the way that you've flipped this stuff around so that the men are talking about it. So
yeah, right. Yeah, it's true. I make them have these uncomfortable conversations.
Right. And my question to you then is, were you afraid after book one and it all worked so magically, were you afraid, like, how am I going to keep this going?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I mean, everyone always talks about, warns you that writing that second book is hard, you know, the sophomore slump. And that was so true. I had no idea if I'd be able to pull it off again. I mean, could they have conversations that would be both funny but also meaningful again? You know, would the shtick get old really fast? And so I was absolutely worried about that. I'm still worried about it. Every new book, I'm like, oh my gosh, can I do this again? Or did I completely like run out of funny with that one? But I think what I try to do is I always start each book with thinking about what lesson do I need this character to learn in order to sort of become his full self, right? I mean, what, in order to be the best partner and the best friend and the best person he can be, what is the lesson, or what wrong lesson has he learned in life because of toxic masculinity that he has to undo? And so then I sort of start with that premise and then sort of build the plot and their conversations around that. You know, so in the case of book three, you know, you find out that, you know, Noah has learned some bad lessons along the way, you know, of what it means, even though he's a completely cinnamon roll hero. I mean, he's so kind and gentle, but he still maintains some very lessons that he's been taught throughout his life that he can't get over. So I worry about it with every book that I'm not going to be able to do it again.
And yet you have. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving. One thing I've also noted about your books, that because it's about a book club, and of course there have been other book club books before, like most famously the Jane Austen book club by Karen Joy Fowler. Yep. That did amazing things. So you have to excerpt the fictional fiction in each of your books a little bit. So you have to like write part of a fake romance novel in each one. And how does that feel? Like, is that hard?
No, it's actually really fun. It actually has served a wonderful purpose from a writing perspective, is that it almost provides sort of a breather scene, you know, like that after something has happened, you know, between the main characters, then we sort of jump into this, you know, meta-fictional world that can help to sort of foreshadow and move the rest of the story forward a little bit. So that's kind of been a fun thing to play with. And in particular, in the first book, I really liked writing the historical, because I've never even tried to write, you know, a Regency romance before. So that was really fun to sort of test my writing muscles with that. But that's one of my favorite parts of writing these books, are the mini book within a book.
Is there often a lot more of the mini book within a book than we get?
Oh, yeah. So much of it ends up being cut. Oh, yeah. In fact, I think my one regret with Undercover Bromance is that we ended up cutting too much. I wish that we had actually gone with, originally I had like the full number of excerpts like we had done in the first book, and we ended up cutting those because they just weren't quite working as well. Like, my editor was like, I don't know if these are working. So I wish we had worked a little harder to incorporate those in the second book, but because a lot, yeah, we ended up cutting so much. But a lot of it ends up on the on the cutting room floor for sure.
I saw somewhere a little article about some men somewhere who had at least for a moment adopted your strategy, and a group of men discussed a book. I'm sure you saw this as well.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Then someone wrote an article about it. And what did you think when that happened?
Yeah, that was so funny. That if you're talking about the men's health article, I don't know if that's
okay,
the one you're
yes.
talking about. And so the author of that article, actually, he did interview me for it and told me that, that he was going to be doing this. And I was so happy with how that turned out, you know, because I was a little bit nervous at first. I didn't know, was this going to be one of those situations where they just end up making fun of romance novels? I mean, anyone who writes romance knows that that's happened, you
yes.
know, way too often, you know, but he was so open-minded. His name's Jason Rogers. He's the person who did that. And he continues, his group continues to read romance novels. They're a real book club now. And so the way that that article turned out, I was so happy with how open-minded he was and how seriously he took it, you know, actually really examining and dissecting romance novels and the lessons that he and his friends could learn from it, and applying those lessons to their lives. It was really, really interesting. I was so excited about that.
That is cool. And I saw somewhere in probably just a Twitter comment, who knows, and someone took it upon themselves to say, oh, but men don't really talk like that.
Yes.
And, you know,
women don't really talk like that either. I mean, that's, you know, we don't
yeah.
talk like people in books, and people in books don't talk like us. Otherwise, the book would just, you know, fall to the floor in a sort of dull and irritating stupor full of us and likes and, yeah, and yes.
And it's like, that's kind of the whole point. No, men don't talk like that, you know, that we would like them to be having those kinds of conversations and challenge them to, you know, sort of sit with their own assumptions and examine them and dissect them and try to view the world a little bit different than they have been. That's, you know, kind of the point.
So one thing that really impresses me about your books is that they come with a sense of a really diverse range of characters. And this is a little challenging, but you're a white woman, and we have seen a lot of white women get attacked for writing characters of different races. Your characters, it's never explicit,
mm-hmm.
and I think that is great in many ways, but as a reader, I often perceive them as BIPOC in various and sundry ways. And, you know, maybe that's on me because some of them are sports heroes, and that may be a sort of an assumption that I make that I shouldn't be making. Anyway, I just wondered, what is your approach to that? Do you
yeah.
Know that about the character and then not put it in? Or do you just sort of intentionally try to create a character who fits into the world in a different way?
Yeah, you know, it's such a great question because in a conversation we're having all across publishing right now, probably way too late than we should have been having that conversation. My world has to reflect the world. And so, you know, going into creating this book club, it just simply wasn't realistic to say that this was going to be a group of just white guys, you know, yeah. I mean, because that's not the world. And it's certainly not the world of professional athletics. It's not the world, you know, and originally these guys were, when I originally came up with the idea, they were all going to be on the same baseball team. And then my editor and I sort of expanded it and said, let's sort of expand the cast of characters a little. So it's not just athletes, but, you know, the world isn't just, it's not a white world. And, you know, to think that, you know, I'm not going to create a world that just simply reflects, you know, that is just all white, and is just all Christian and is just, you know, all heterosexual. So that's not the world that I live in. It's not the world that I exist in. So that would make no sense to me to write a book that way. I think we're in terms of how to identify those characters, you know, that to me, I sort of have a couple of ways that I approach that. And one is, I think one of the mistakes that sometimes authors tend to make is we only describe, for example, the skin color
yep.
of a non-white character. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not going to be, so which sends the message that the default character is white, right? That the default setting must be a white character, you know, must be white right. skin. So I purposely, I don't do a ton of physical description in general for a lot of my characters. And that's just sort of a personal style in that I like, for romance, I like my readers to be able to sort of imagine, create an imagination of their own of what a character might look like. And so if I'm not going to go into a deep description, you know, description of, you know, these two lead characters who are white, I'm not going to go into a huge deep description of the non-white characters either and send the message that they're somehow other than mm-hmm. the main character. But I think through, you know, if anyone is hopefully through the use of, you know, naming protocols you know, things like that, I think I do send a message that this is a diverse cast, but I don't necessarily describe exactly what someone's background is. But I hope it does come across as a diverse cast.
Well, it definitely comes across to me as a reader, and I also really like it as an approach. Have you been criticized for it?
No, I mean, not directly. Okay. Possibly in the world there is a criticism for it. But not to be directly.
Can you go read all your bad reviews and tell me if any of them are... Yeah, no, don't do that. Can you go to Goodreads and just wallow for about 7 hours and then come back?
Right.
Please
what everyone hates about me. I have it, but you know, it's funny because I do talk about these things with my editor a lot, and we're actually dealing with an issue in terms of how to describe someone's accent right now in the book I'm currently writing. Because we, you know, the whole idea of, you know, I don't like to, you know, put in italics if someone speaks temporarily in a foreign language, you know, a non-English language. I don't like to put the non-English phrase in italics, because again, it sort of otherizes the language, right? It sort of sends the message that that's a...
Well, yeah, but I think if you were writing a book in Spanish, you would italicize the English.
Probably. If I could write a book in Spanish, that would be amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, actually the punctuation protocols are entirely different in other languages. So I don't know. I wouldn't, that one doesn't bother me, but okay.
Yeah, well, the punctuation, oh my gosh, right now I'm trying to write a Russian character in that. All right, let me tell you how hard that's been, because it's a completely different alphabet. So,
well, I believe you, and I'm so excited that you're writing for that character. And
that was kind of a spoiler while you're there. Well,
no, it's on your website. We know it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I saw that you kind of set him up. In the end of book 3, and I was happy about that. But I have a couple I have a couple of questions about this. Oh, and one, if you want to read a novel where the author just killed it with a Russian character.
Yeah, I do.
Heated Rivalry by Rachel Reed is just fabulous.
Write that down. Okay.
He's a Russian hockey player as well.
And, great.
She did an amazing job with that. So, and apparently it's narrated by a guy who also does an amazing job. But my question was just more about the Russian is a comic foil in the first three books. And then you had to make him a serious person. And I've actually, I've stepped in this same trap myself before.
Blakey.
Yes. Yes, I have done this same thing, and I remember looking at my co-author and thinking, like, wow, we've really done it now. Yes. So good luck with that. No,
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering about your approach there. It's super fun.
Well, yeah, so I never intended to write the Russians book. I mean, it was, when I created him as a character, he was comic relief. I mean, it was, he was sort of every stereotype. The point of him, you know, he's sort of every stereotype that we have about big beefy athletes, you know, that,
yes.
You know, he's hairy and he's, you know, but, So then I really had, he's fun to sort of turn that stereotype around, that he's also like the most gentle of all of the characters. You know, he's the one who gives the best hugs and he's really emotional and he cries a lot and, you know, loves animals. And so, but when people started asking for his book and I, you know, after the second, after Undercover, people started really asking for it. And I was like, wow, really? They, you're seeing romance hero out of this guy?
You know, been there.
So it got me thinking. And so I was able to sort of, start imagining a story for him. And I built in some sort of hints into book three about what might be coming for him. And, I'm working on the edits right now for his book. And it's just been really fun to sort of show this other side of him and for people to get to know him on a little deeper level. And, you know, that the guy who gives all the best hugs, you know, sometimes he's going to need a hug too. And it's just really fun. Yeah.
The thing that I really liked both about the way Serena did it, and then I also was really excited that you were building up this character to be something, to have his own book. And there's something really lovely about either the withdrawn character that which Serena has done as well, that sort of needs to be pulled out, or the one who relies on humor or is just, you know, the fun guy. There's something really endearing about getting to see the next layer down on that. So I think there's something sort of built into it that's appealing if you can hit the right notes. I think it's going to be great.
I hope it's been a lot of pressure because I know people, you know, people like, they love the Russian. And so, you know, it's definitely a lot, but for me as a reader, that's always fun too. Like, you mean, you know, series that you read and there's always that one character that all of a sudden, you know, you get to see behind, you know, a peek behind the curtain about who they really are. And that to me is always so satisfying as a reader.
That is an amazing part of series.
It's just so fun.
So speaking of series and things that we think are fun to read, this is going to be a great moment to start talking about what we've been reading. But before we do that, we're going to take a tiny break to hear about one of our amazing sponsors. Listeners, you know we're about to get into what we've been reading. And, as always, we've been reading some good stuff. But have you ever thought about how those books get so good? Or maybe thought you could be part of making an author's novel, memoir, or nonfiction as good as it could possibly be and get paid for that work? Author Accelerator has a book coach training program that students describe as truly life-changing. They dig into the mechanics, process, and emotion of coaching, but they don't stop there. Their program also helps you turn coaching into a profitable business that fits into your life. Find out more at bookcoaches.com/amwriting. And we are back, and we are going to let you go first, Lissa, because we always like to hear what the guest has been reading first. Give us some of your finest, best, distracting. Well, just tell us what you've been reading right now.
Yes. Oh, gosh. I don't read as much as I wish I could because I, you know, oh, don't we all have a to be read pile a mile high. But the book that I just read that absolutely blew me away, and I am like, just like, I recommend to like random strangers right now, is a book called Just a Heartbeat Away by an author named Cara Bastone. She's a new author out just now from HQN. And it blew me away. I mean, absolutely, this book absolutely blew me away. It is a age gap romance. So it's about a 40-year-old widow who falls in love with his son's preschool teacher, who's like 28, 29, I think. And it is the absolute sweetest, most heartfelt story. And I've actually read it twice. And it just came out over the summer.
I blurbed that book.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the editor sent it to me on a random dreary day when I had a cold.
Aww.
And no time to read it. And I opened it anyway, darn it. And I spent the day like tweeting out, you know, how angry I was at the editor because I was so sucked into this book. The writing is beautiful.
Oh my God, she's such a good writer. I know. I just adored. Yeah. Like I said, I'm like recommending it to every single, like grabbing random people in the grocery store. And then the other, Alexa Martin is sort of like my new like favorite. I don't know if you guys have read any of her series. She writes a football series. So,
oh, I have been dying to get that. Is that the one where the woman takes over the football team?
The first one is, she runs a women's, sort of almost a women's strip club. It's called Hers. And so every book follows a different player, but told from the first person perspective of the woman lead. And it's the one that's out right now called Snapped. Yeah. She takes over as their, you know, and as, oh God, what is the, as a, totally blanking on the correct term for what she does, like marketing.
That's right. She's the marketing manager. The guy takes a knee during
he takes the knee. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one I've been meaning to grab that, figuring it would send me into the series.
Yeah. I kept wanting to call her publicist. I'm like, no, that's not the job title. But so he takes a knee, and I mean, if you've ever met or talked to Alexa, I mean, like, she's just such an amazing, lovely person. And when you read her books, you just sort of feel like you're talking to a friend, like someone's, like, she's looking inside your own head, you know, like her thoughts and the things that this whole series is just amazing. And you don't have to read them in order. Like, you could start with Snapped, the one that just came out. Mm-hmm. So those are two books right now that I'm just like, I have had a chance to read and just like giving to everybody I can think of.
Wonderful.
Who's up? Next?
I'll go.
Okay.
I had a recent birthday, and I was gifted from my mother a new e-reader, which is a Kobo Libra, and I love it so much. And not only is it ergonomic and the screen is great, and anyway, I love the Kobo Libra, but it also has a connection to OverDrive, so you can borrow library books right on the device.
Oh, wow, really?
Nice.
Yeah, so I just downloaded a book that I'd read once before called Again the Magic by Lisa Claypas, which is a historical romance, and she is super talented. And so I am enjoying that as like a comfort read.
All right, I'll go next.
Oh, okay. Jess.
I'll go next. So I, during this this pandemic, I picked up a bunch of books that my husband loves that I have never read, that he just sort of raves about, and I had, you know, I have them, but I never read them. So I actually got the audio of Thornton Wilder's The Bridge of San Luis Rey, and that's my current listen, and oh my gosh, it is so beautiful, and it's not very long. I think the audio is like 4 hours or something like that, and it's so beautiful. I'm loving it so so much. And of course, I've been reading Crazy Stupid Bromance as well. So that's been my, it's been a really nice going back and forth between the two. It's been a really good week.
Two different books, yes.
just a little.
I mean, you know, maybe for your next book, you could do some sort of crossover.
Exactly.
All right. Well, it's my turn and I am zoom, looking up the name of the author of one of the books that I've been reading, which is Ties That Tether.
Oh, yes. That's on my list of books to read. Yeah.
She's Jane Igaro. And it is a Canadian, it's set in Canada and it's an immigrant romance. And one of the, is it that one set in Canada or California? I'm pretty sure it's Canada. Dang it. It's Canada, Toronto. I just glanced at the first page and they're staggering into their hotel room in downtown Toronto. So I had that right. I was pretty sure that I did. Anyway, it can be challenging to find reasons why a hero and heroine cannot be together right now. And when you've got people from massively different cultures and immigrants whose parents feel really strongly about them sustaining their cultural heritage, that can be a really great way into both exploring the romance and exploring the culture. And Ties That Tether is an excellent example of that. And speaking of heroes and heroines that need to be kept apart, I'm just taking us back to the classic Jane Austen. I read a Jane Austen adaptation recently. It's called All Stirred Up. It's by Brianne Moore. And in it, this is a persuasion plot, but they are chefs in Edinburgh. And I don't know about you, but that's absolutely all I needed. Like, persuasion plot, chefs and editor in Edinburgh. So done. But those can be, you know, there's a lot of Jane Austen plot driven books out there. This is one of the better adaptations. I really enjoyed it, and not just because you had me at Chefs in Edinburgh.
All right. This was fantastic. This was just so great. I've been sitting in the back just listening because I just wanted to be here for this conversation today, and I'm so glad I was here for it. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you, Lissa, and where, if we want to find your books, give the title of your books and where we can find those?
Well, they can find me way too often on Twitter at Lissa K. Adams. For my own mental health, I'm on there way too much. And I am on Instagram, too. I do like, even though my 15-year-old daughter has informed me that I suck at Instagram, apparently. I do everything wrong on Instagram. So, but I guess.
Wait. Do we all do everything wrong on Instagram?
I don't know.
Do we need a point, like a tip sheet from her? Yes,
apparently, I'm terrible at Instagram. So I don't know.
She's like, might not be your target.
You don't even have common aesthetic. I'm like, what? I just take pictures and post them. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? But my book. So Crazy Stupid Romance. Yep. Just came out this week and it's really available everywhere. I mean, it's, you know, you can get it on it. But I'm right now really, of course, pushing if you can order from an indie store, that's awesome, because I know they're really struggling, but you can get it from Amazon as well, and, you know, ebook, audiobook, and print. But you don't have to have read the previous two, you know, in the series. Like, you don't have to read them in order, although I think it's kind of fun.
You'll just want to get them later.
But yeah,
this would make a really nice stack of Christmas gift for Just true. Saying, just throwing it out there. Holiday gift, Hanukkah gift, anything that you're celebrating, it
bromance
would absolutely
bundle.
Do that.
Nice little
bromance bundle. I like it.
Yeah. But it's been, it's so exciting to have it, to have the third book out already. And I really loved writing Noah and Alexis's story. So
awesome.
KJ, was there anything you wanted to add here at the end?
Yes, I want to remind everybody that if you want to chat with us about anything that you heard in this episode or in any episode, please head over to the #AmWriting Facebook group, where, you know, we and a couple of thousand of our closest friends. No, that makes it, there are lots of people on there, but that makes it sound like it isn't any fun. And it totally is fun. It's a great place to get advice and to connect with us and to connect with other writers. So check us out there. If you would like to get the show notes for every episode in your email, along with the occasional bonus, please head to amwritingpodcast.com, where you can sign up and find all the show notes for all 230-some-odd of the previous episodes. And if you would like to financially support the podcast or gift a financial supportness, that's not the great word, of the podcast to one of your friends, you can also do that there. And our financial supporters get a little something-something extra from us that varies every week. Mini podcasts, top fives for writers, product reviews, all kinds of stuff. So you can find us there, and we hope you will.
All right, one last time, thank you so much, Lissa K. Adams. Everyone should go out and read her books about the Bromance Book Club because they are just a total delight.
Oh, and thank you.
You're so welcome. And to all the listeners out there, until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. The Hashtag Am Writing podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Same.